Now, 515-51 Ray at RTE.ie. Now, Comfort is the new book from Ota Lenghi, and it's the work of four people. Tara Wigley, Verena Lochmuller, Helen Goh, and of course, Yotam Ota Lenghi. And Helen and Yotam are in the studio in London. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hello, Ray.
Yeah, congratulations on the book. It's good enough to eat. It looks so amazing. It's the lovely fresh colours and the embossed writing. It's tactile. It's something for all the senses bar smell, I think. If you can develop that technology, yes.
The next book will have
scratches. What is it? Scratch and sniff.
Yeah. It's brilliant. And can I say in a very positive way, Yotam, that it's quite accessible?
I'm glad you said we have addressed the elephant in the room so early in the conversation. Because I know what you're kind of aiming at, and that's the idea that every recipe I've ever created is as long as the whole book. But in actual fact, if you check the recipes very carefully, you find them being really super accessible.
Yes.
And one of the ideas of Comfort that came during our conversation is kind of the ease at which we cook, which brings us comfort. And what is the likelihood that someone will cook a dish? So this is a very important conversation that we're constantly having in the test kitchen, because we really, really want you to cook it.
Of course, cookbooks aren't just about cooking. Because, you know, there are millions of cookbooks all over the world, some of them that are rarely used. They're a thing of beauty to look at. It's a nice experience to flick through them. So that's part of it. And the book fulfills that purpose if people bought it and never cooked anything from it. But of course, Helen, you want people to cook, don't you?
Absolutely. And yes, we've worked, you know, as Yotam said, we've worked very hard to simplify it and to make it very accessible. You know, we've done the work so that now it's on the page and all you have to do is just follow the recipe.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You could view and make your own twists on things. That would be okay as well.
And twists are important to you, Yotam. I get The Guardian every Saturday, specifically for Feast, which, if people don't know, is the recipe magazine. And you're there front and centre every week. I've only cooked ever one recipe. It was a savoury bread. But I love reading it every week and I salivate on a Saturday morning. So thank you for all of that joy. And now I see, as if you weren't busy enough, that you're offering your advice to readers of The Guardian.
Yes, occasionally we come up with some culinary advice just, you know, to kind of reassure people when they're in the kitchens that they're doing the right things and give them little tips. I think most people, sometimes it's about the information, many times it's about the reassurance, and which kind of takes us to this theme of comfort, because often I feel historically people, especially in the past 15 years, people approach cooking as a competitive sport, and that's not very relaxing. And increasingly I've noticed people actually now go into the kitchen for a completely different reason, and that is to find comfort and solace in the act of cooking. And this is why we wanted this book to really do that, so people would come in and feel, okay, I can do this and I want to do it, rather than I need to prove something or I need to impress. This is all about the food that gives you that emotional reaction. That's wonderful. I've got in front of me we were talking about earlier, that fish pie that we have. So it's a slightly different fish pie. Helen, do you want to describe it? Because I think it is very comforting, isn't it?
Yes. If you're looking for ease, also the fact that you can buy a packet of frozen fish and tip it into this wonderful sauce. And the topping, instead of mashed potato, which nothing wrong with that, but we've got mashed celeriac and beans and white beans. So it's a slightly lighter kind of fish pie. It offers all the comfort without it being stodgy in the least.
Yeah. I don't know if either of you have read this brilliant book by a Japanese writer, The Kumagawa Food Detective. Have you heard of it?
No.
I've heard of the name, but yeah, I can't say I've read it. Yeah, it sounds enticing.
Yeah, the concept is brilliant. It's a retired police officer and his daughter. They run a little restaurant, but people come to them because they want to recreate a recipe from their childhood. It could have been something that their granny baked, or it could be something that maybe a former lover made or something like that. There's about 10 little vignettes in it. But reading the introduction to Comfort reminded me of that book, because it is like comfort is about nostalgia, it's about memories, it's about people you would have had these meals with. Tell me about your background, Helen. So your grandmother was Chinese.
Yes, I grew up in Malaysia. My grandparents were from China and my parents were both born in Malaysia, which is I don't know if you've been there, but it's a very multicultural, you know, the Indians and the Chinese and the Malays all live sort of, you know, all together. Mm. And the cuisines get a bit mixed up. So I'm kind of used to, I guess, a bit of, you know, mixing and matching, mm. which is probably why I fit so well in Ottolenghi. Yeah. And then I moved to Australia, which the cuisine is really about the fresh produce. And, you know, it's also very inventive because it's not confined to a particular style of cooking. Mm. It just means that it's a very creative hub of chefs that work from there. And coupled with the produce, it's just really amazing food.
You're big in Australia, Yotam. I was just doing my research and I saw you at the Sydney Opera House there about 4 years ago. Is that the biggest crowd you've ever...
I think there were like 4,000 people. I don't quote me on that, but there was a lot of people there. And what is so incredible about the Sydney Opera House is that not only the number of people, but you're surrounded by
them. Oh, you're in the middle.
You're kind of in the middle. And it is a terrifying experience. I was there with Adam Leo, and, you know, he was making my life very easy because he was a great interviewer, but it was pretty stressful.
Well, Australians take their food very seriously and they're evangelical about your tongue.
Yes, yeah. And you were saying Ottolenghi as a thing, and it is, it's a hub. So it's the person, but it's also this industry now with books and this hub. So you get together and you test recipes. I'm wondering, do you have very honest chats? Because one of the things that comes up in the intro again is what we eat when we're on our own, and the fact that a lot of people lie about what they eat when they're on their own. So it begs the question to you both, what do you eat when you're on your own? Helen.
Do you know what? I mean, for me, comfort food is so linked with my emotions and my moods. And so that's different every day.
All right.
And today, I would say that fish pie is really speaking to me.
You're not going to. That's a lie. Okay, Yotam, what's
I love rice. There's right. always a lot, many rice dishes in my books. And this one is no exception. There's many rice dishes. So if I'm feeling lazy, then just some boiled rice with grated parmesan, butter, black pepper.
Ah.
I'm happy. Folded through, and it's like, it's a cheesy rice. And actually, in this book, we've got two cheesy rice, mm-hmm. or actually almost three, including the rice cakes.
Right. That's right.
Where you add cheese to your rice, and I'm sure your listener will appreciate that. So you kind of take a bite, whether it's from a fritter or from a bowl, and you've got that like strand of rice that you kind of stretch out into your mouth. And that, for me, is like the ultimate comfort, because it's got the smell of the rice, that kind of starchy, ricey smell, plus the cheese. It's heaven.
And is there
and
butter as well?
Free version of the team. It's
always butter.
Always
yes,
butter.
Ray, always butter. There's a lot of olive oil too.
Yeah, yeah. Because you were saying the three things there, carbs, fat and sugar are the things we crave for comfort.
Yes and no. So we were trying to really figure out what that comfort word even means, because it's just so particular to a person, to a culture. Mm. So, for example, we have cold dishes, which not many people in this part of the world would associate with comfort. We have a buckwheat green tea noodles that are served with avocado and radishes and a citrusy dressing. That is probably very comforting in warm places, but less here, but I can get loads of comfort from it in the summer. So it's a very subjective experience what comfort actually means. It means different things to different people, but there are cross-cultural elements, and we kind of highlight them in the book as we go along, and that's things that have sugar in them often feel that comforting, even in savory food. Potatoes, no doubt, you know, they're very international. The Irish audience would be surprised to hear with how comforting they are to people. Rice, chicken, etc.
Of course, the next challenge is to make comfort for each country individually. You know, like, there's lovely recipes in here, and I'm looking forward to making the puttanesca style salmon tray bake. That looks delicious. And then there's the potato fennel smoked salmon. But there's no reference to bacon, cabbage and potatoes. Yotam, that's a major omission.
We have many references to all three of them separately, one of them. So, you know, that they are all there, the bacon, the cabbage, the potatoes, not quite together. But, you know, there's many books on the horizon, so we can make a version of that in the future. But we have a delicious potato, which I think people would love. So it's a jacket potato, you know, as that we like cooking it in these aisles. And it's a jacket potato, but we have kind of really changed it. So it's as you kind of fluff it up, you add like fried diced aubergines or eggplants and some green tahini sauce and a little cabbage pickle on top. So it's a delicious thing to have. It doesn't have any of the familiar things, but it has the potato as the base, as the most familiar thing you can have. So it's
a new
take on an old idea.
Helen, I wonder, has anybody ever done scientific study on how much people salivate when reading cookbooks? I'm off the scale. Mulligatawny is there as well. I don't know why mulligatawny is part of my youth. It's a sort of a curry soup, is it?
Yes, it's funny you say that because it was part of my youth.
Oh,
I learned to cook
right?
mulligatawny in Australia from a kind of Women's Weekly cookbook. And I mean, I love soups, but I also love curries. And for me, that just offers everything. You've got the rice, you've got the chicken, you've got the soupy element, and it's sort of exciting to eat at the same time as being comforting. So that would be a real go-to dish
for
me.
You can make it out of your leftover Christmas meal.
Yes.
You know, with the turkey or whatever you roast, if you roast the chicken or the turkey. And funnily enough, it's also my mum also used to make mulligatawny. So it feels like we're all in the same room. Kind of
rice and chicken. And the fact that it's in a bowl, you can cradle it in a bowl. You've got the whole meal, you know, in one cradling in your hands.
It's, I suppose it's the Asian version of minestrone, is it? You mentioned the C word there, Yotam, and I see there's a recipe for sprouts, charred sprouts. That looks interesting.
Yeah, so the Brussels sprouts are there. And I have to say that in my Christmas at home, we kind of keep some things traditional, but other things have that addition of something because, you know, Christmas is another moment in which you kind of want to keep the familiar as is and not inject too much innovation. But a little innovation is good. So our charred sprouts have some preserved lemons. You don't have to have them, but I think the main thing there is that the charring of the sprouts with a chili that gives it that slightly bit of smokiness. And, you know, sprouts are controversial, but I've served this dish to many people who are quite traditional in the way they serve their sprouts or don't even like sprouts, and they've managed to really enjoy it.
You've converted them.
I have converted them. So this is a great thing for the autumn and for Christmas.
Actually, the other thing great for Christmas is that pretty much three-ingredient parsnip.
That looks nice too, yes.
It's a very simple dish, but the texture's in that. It's kind of crispy and chewy and then meltingly soft inside.
And, you know, we're always thinking around Christmas, how do we actually get all the cooking done because there's so many things? And these parsnips are so easy to make. They're roasted with parmesan, with black pepper, and kind of that's almost it.
Yeah. Have you done any research on how you've contributed to the sales of preserved lemons, Yotam?
I've yet to do this research, but you know, a few years ago you couldn't buy preserved lemons, and now you can get them everywhere.
Well, this is the thing that comes up regularly, and would you explain it to me? Za'atar, is that how it's pronounced? Z-A-A-T-A-R. It's a combination of spices, is it?
No, za'atar is actually, it's a dried herb.
Right.
So za'atar is a herb. It grows in Palestine and Israel. It's picked and dried. That's the particular herb that's called za'atar. It's from the family of herbs that are quite familiar to people as like marjoram and oregano. They have that kind of smell. And once it's dried, you add to it is sumac and salt and sesame seeds, and that creates the powder or the condiment that we sprinkle on it. And it's very, very important in Palestinian diet and all around that area in Jordan and Lebanon, Syria. It's a wonderful thing to have. And it's
a regular in your recipes.
Definitely.
We have it in rugelach, which is a kind of, it looks like a miniature croissant. It's a pastry, and we saute leeks and with za'atar, and we kind of roll it up in this pastry. It's absolutely delicious.
Yeah. I know there are food podcasts, but sometimes people over-intellectualize and over-analyze recipes. I'd listen to you two just talking about food all day without any analysis, just, you know, describing recipes and how things taste. It's the ASMR of food, I suppose. So, like, because you're living food, we all have to eat, you know, and most people love eating, but it's part of your work. So how do you separate the two, Helen?
We don't.
Oh, you don't? Okay.
We don't. We just go from one meeting of eating to slurping noodles afterwards to drinking a beer after that. It's all just one big eating fest.
It's very confusing when you come home from work at the end of the day to really establish how hungry you are and what you should be eating, yeah. because there's never this kind of moment where you sit down to eat and then the other one coming, you know, 5 hours later. It's a continuous stream of food, and it's a wonderful thing, but it can be quite confusing sometimes.
I mean, sometimes when we have these meetings where we're tasting food, you've got to put up something really good at 4 o'clock. At 11 o'clock, you're more likely to get the okay, everything tastes great. But at 4 o'clock, you've got to work very hard. Yeah. Your dish has got to be wonderful for everyone to test. Eating for 6 hours. Exactly.
Oh, the pressure. Yeah, the pressure.
Pressure, yes.
So it's a misnomer then, because I see that you call yourselves now the Four Hungries, but you're actually never hungry. By sounds of it.
You're absolutely right. We would be hungry in theory, but in practice we're never hungry.
You're never hungry, yeah. What a joyful way to live your life. And this is a joy as well. Comfort is the name of the book. And it's there with its beautifully coloured ribbon bookmarks. I forgot to mention those at the top in pink and orange. Congratulations again, and thanks so much, Helen and Yotam, for taking time out to talk to
us
today.
Thank you so much. I just wanted to add that I'm going to be in Dublin next week on Wednesday in front of an audience. So I just wanted to bring that in very quickly at the end.
4,000 people. No,
I don't think so, but I'd be happy with a quarter of that. But yeah, it's going to be real fun, and I always love coming back to Dublin, looking forward to being there.
Great. Thanks so much, Yotam. Thanks, Helen. Have a good day.
Thank you so much for having us. Bye.